It's the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses. This is the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses.
I don't know what to do right now. I'm so confused. And this is the first week that this whole thing has started. And I'm obviously not 100% where I thought I was. I don't know what to do.
Welcome to Game of Roses. This is Pace Case, Lizzie Pace.
This is Bachelor Clues. Bachelor Clues. We're back. It's been a long off season. But now we move into a brand new season. A brand new cycle of suffering started tonight. And we're here to break it down for you, give you all of our best plays, best players, errors of the game, bystanders of the week, and really break down what effective play happened and what could have worked out better for some of the players as they're trying to make their way through what is statistically the worst night of the game. This is where
the giant slaughter.
You have about 25% chance of going home on night one. This cycle of suffering, now, it bears mentioning, this is a different opening week than we've ever seen before. Usually, the opening episode ends with the first rose ceremony and the hustling into black limousines of all those souls that Lord Harrison has dined upon this night. But this is different. The rose ceremony came kind of in the middle of the episode, and we got what essentially would have been the second episode started to air in this, in the back half of the
three hours. Trying to figure that out the whole time, but I mean, they did it so they could have the Hannah B. cliffhanger, which I guess they decided was more exciting than people going home. I'm just fucking glad that they didn't have the live premiere where they have all the like hosts and the viewing parties and all that, and all the people proposing. Oh God, I hated that shit.
However, when they have all the hosts and they do bring back the other players, those little kind of mini moments throughout our beloved game's glorious history allow some players to come in and get more screen time. If you'll remember, in the episode you invoke, it was Goose and Crystal were in a hot tub interviewing people in a parking lot.
So this week we start with, we got the Top Gun beginning sequence.
Right in, just fucking knee deep. We're in the deep end of the fucking pool right off the bat with the pilot shit.
Bachelor Clues goes 2 seconds in and my hate meter is a million.
When they showed the fucking plane, there was a wide shot of a plane doing a loop-de-loop, like a fucking daredevil stunt in the sky. And we're meant to believe that's fucking Pilot Pete up there?
What, you think it's not him?
It's not him.
Of course it's not him.
Oh, God. But it's meant to be. Where the audience is meant to believe that this guy's a fucking daredevil, that he can just do curly cues in the sky and shit.
Yeah, they're trying to tap into the sexual unconscious of the nation.
Unconscious? We'll get to that in a moment. I don't think so. So we've got Pete.
He's speaking Spanish with his parents. They're really playing up the Cuban thing.
Yes. He's definitely ethnic. Then Peter says, I'm in the captain's chair now. And we start to see him walking through the airport, but he's having trouble getting through because people are stopping him and asking him for
selfies,
photos, to take selfies with him. So they've now put into the introduction of the new Bachelor that part of his appeal is being famous. The fame he sought, he now has. That's what they're delivering to us here. It's just we are getting deeper and deeper into the era of our beloved game that is Instagram, that is based on fame, social currency. It matters in a way that is tangible in the show now.
It also is really funny because like he like talks with some like normal looking people and one of them flirts with him and he's like, I think I found my co-pilot, and like laughs it off like, oh, I don't date plebes anymore. We can all agree this is hilarious. Then we have the intros of some of the players. Alexa waxing, Hannah Celeste modeling. And she says, I'm just a normal girl. And they cut to her whole family at a meal praying.
It's, to my knowledge, the fastest we've ever seen a Christian invocation in a full season of The Bachelor.
I mean, it's, yeah, the second intro.
It was within 2.5 minutes. We've got a family praying to Jesus Christ Almighty. This is the Christian era of the game, and it's proven throughout. As we go through the rest of this recap, I have many examples of Christendom being brought up in this. And it's, I think it just
several
gets
times
worse
they say
worse.
Blessed. She says, I'm blessed.
Thank God, et cetera, et cetera.
Pilot Pete says he's blessed.
It's almost as if the pageant world has just supplanted directly into The Bachelor. And now there's this extra element that is the game that they have to play, but they're still all just vying for a sash, for a title, which is Bachelorette. Yeah. And it's so strange to me that the other pieces of that culture have come over with it.
Of pageants?
Yeah. The Christianity.
Like the eating disorders.
The misogyny. Racism. Those things are catered to in this show now. We haven't discussed this, nor would we if we just go off of our recap here. So let's take a minute to talk about Victoria Fuller.
We're talking about white supremacy and The Bachelor here, basically. We found these pictures that she's tagged in. I mean, she didn't even remove the tags on these. I feel like this is rookie preseason rule number one. You always remove your problematic tags, your problematic likes. I mean, you should comb that shit because it will be combed. I didn't 100%. Even look that hard.
Yeah, exactly. It just comes out now. And for her to have not realized that was a terrible mistake.
For those of you who haven't seen it, she's basically in this like WLM gear. And she claims it's We Love Marlins, but all of the shirts say White Lives Matter. And then there's some Blue Lives Matter, etc.
And they use the Confederate flag as a logo on the back of one of their shirts.
Fish in the Confederate flag.
And she modeled their clothing. The producers certainly knew this. 100%. Like you're saying, you didn't even have to look that hard to find it.
Yeah.
There are people whose entire jobs are to scour through these people's social media to see who they are. That's how they cast the show, primarily. You know, friend recommendations and all that, like Hannah Sluss is Hannah Goodwin's friend. Those producers knew all of this shit existed, that there are pictures of her in White Lives Matter gear, and they cast her, I believe, because of it. Because they are catering to an audience who enjoys that type of thing.
And it will drive a news cycle when these photos come out, you mean?
Not only will it drive a news cycle, she will now have detractors and supporters, and that becomes its own thing.
It's interesting because she was the one who, when we looked at her Instagram, she made these allegations that she was being online bullied. And I believe that was before those pictures came out.
Well, we don't know. I mean, the season is long. I think she's going to last a little while in it. And we'll see what happens with her. But I thought it was just worth mentioning before we get into the thing. We're not even fucking into the actual gameplay
yet.
We're just talking about the pomp and circumstance around the opening first few shots. So far, no gameplay. Let's get into this now.
Yeah.
We've spent enough time on these other matters. Let's get into the game.
Yes.
The beautiful game, our beloved game.
It's good to be back.
It is
our
a terror
game.
To be back. When I was watching the show tonight, I was really like, maybe this is it. Maybe I could just check out. Maybe I could just not watch the season. Take my life back.
Did you see any errors in this week's game?
Yeah, there were a couple. None super costly, but definitely some errors, some things that should not have been done.
Yeah, Cheyenne, a couple times, didn't stand up for herself, didn't reclaim her time. I feel like those were big errors. She just let the other players walk all over her.
Yeah, that was potentially costly. I'll get to my errors and stuff as we go through.
So, Hannah Sluss is in a normal cult. She's a normal girl. We see blonde pageant girl who has a dead dad and an addiction mom, multiple PTCs. Kelly the lawyer, her whole family are lawyers. They're very protective and ask her if Peter has joined the Mile High Club.
She met
Peter at a friend's wedding beforehand. We also learned that.
They've met before, and then her brothers tease her about fucking this man. And this is the first time that we really get like, oh, okay. They're going to hit that fucking hard that he fucks.
They hit that, and it's also, they're in like the boardroom of their law offices when they have this conversation.
Hey, where do you joke with your siblings about people they're about to fuck? Where else do you do it except the boardroom of a big law firm that your family owns?
We have Maddie the Zealot. She's super close with her dad. It's very strange. And he's maybe her basketball coach. Was that a different older dude?
No, that's what she said. Madison Pruitt. She won 27 state high school championships or whatever, and her
dad
coached her
the whole
time. These
girls are so young that we're seeing them be like, my last accomplishment was my high school sports team.
Coached by my father. At some point near this moment, they cut to Peter, and we see him give a little confessional, and he says, this is going to hopefully go down as the most beautiful love story ever.
I wrote that line down, too.
What the fuck? What kind of... That's like Donald Trump saying it was a perfect phone call. It's like, what is that? What's the most perfect love story ever?
It's going to be your new Shakespeare. Pilot Pete. Fucking a girl 5 times.
You're going to outdo Romeo
and
Juliet.
In a lighthouse.
Yeah. 100 years from now, people won't even fucking know who Romeo and Juliet are. Pilot Pete and...
My guess is Sarah Coffin. She's my pick, but...
Sarah Coffin to win the ring?
To win the ring. Next Bachelorette. Maddie or Sluss.
Sluss just looks a little too young to me.
She's got that sexy baby thing.
Do you think they give the Bachelorette to a sexy baby, though? They haven't yet. The Bachelorette does have to have a little connotation of womanliness.
Maybe that's Maddie. I don't know. To me, I am so excited to watch those two duel it out, because I feel like they are going for like the same, we are the sweet brunette Christian girl.
Yes, I totally agree.
And you can tell that they are both like serious players. They have
absolutely
strategy. Sluss fucking talked to him 3 times the first night. I think she's been listening to our
podcast. Madison Pruitt, what she did at the parents' date was fucking, that's a textbook. She made no errors. Not fucking one. Did it? She didn't
here
make any.
Come to my MVP.
Wait. We're not there yet. We're getting out of turn. Let's
what?
Come on. Sorry, everybody. Those are just tantalizing moments. We will get to it later.
I mean, the order is definitely sacred. Peter's beautiful love story. Lord Harrison asks if he's over Hannah, knowing that she's going to surprise him and fucking make him shit his pants on the first night.
That's the shit. Lord Harrison does this shit from time to time where he'll be like, so... How'd the fucking thing go that you thought is over? Oh, that's okay. It's done. And now, you know, I'm glad I'm moving on.
Yeah.
Saying it specifically knowing that they're just going to fucking shit it right in your face again. He's done it a few times.
I can't remember what it was, but it was like, Andy, he had that note in his pocket. What a freak. Oh, it was about the Luke P proposal.
Yes, thing. Exactly.
It was a ring in his pocket. Yeah.
He's like, how are you feeling today, Hannah? Great. I don't know. This little pig guy came out of nowhere. We didn't know anything about it.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, that's the show we watch.
God. So then we get to the limo arrivals. And who is in the coveted first limo spot? Aaliyah? I feel like Aaliyah, she like stopped maturing when she started doing pageants. There's something very... She seems like a little girl to me. She kept like averting her eyes with her hand when he was being like making out with people in a very childlike fashion. I wouldn't be surprised if she's the virgin.
I just have this written down. Someone at some point said he looks like a doll.
Aaliyah
said that.
Yeah. What you want from your sex object, that it looks like a Ken doll with no genitals.
Hey. Don't worry about if we find out if he can fuck or not. We're gonna. You can look like a doll when you can fuck 4 times in a windmill. Someone shows up in a suitcase, and Chris Harrison says, we should cut her in half later.
What?
Yeah.
You did?
Peter's like, it's like a magic trick or something. He's like, yeah, we should cut. They're staring at the empty suitcase. Do you remember? And he says, we should cut her in half later.
You know, a standard suitcase action.
Then we cut to a segment they put together. That has all the women in the house essentially chanting, worshiping the phrase 4 times. It's strung together 4 or 5 shots in a row. 4 times? Oh my God, he had sex with her 4 times? They force all of these women to get into a kind of group chant conversation, repetition of the phrase. four times.
Oh, yeah.
In reference to him having fucked Hannah Brown four times. And now we are hitting this fucking motif that it's like, this is what they're sticking with. This guy likes airplanes and he can fuck. Yeah. And that's all we're going to paint.
His symbols are the windmill and the condom and planes.
How many people had fucking condoms when they came to meet him out of the limo? Multiple.
I know one girl had a row of condoms and then someone did a scan of him later and found a condom in his pocket, like planted it on him. He seems bothered by the condom thing, and I hope that they just plant condoms this whole season and they just find them everywhere they go on dates.
I think it's too creative for the producers, unfortunately. That would be hilarious, though.
Maddie comes in a paper plane. Someone comes in a really expensive car. Lexi.
Savannah did something that was unprecedented. Kissed him right out of the fucking limo.
This was one of my contenders for play.
Early on, I thought it was going to be because I thought we were getting a regular fucking episode that was ending at the rose ceremony. And I was like, that's definitely going to get you a rose. And it did. But so much more happened in this fucking episode that I was just like, oh my God. And there was so much good play.
It was such a good play, though. Like,
but I mean, because throughout the entire episode, everybody was making good plays.
Yes.
There was very little missed opportunity, and there was very little error, truly. And the errors that were made were minor. They had no lasting effect.
So, White Lives Matter Victoria makes a joke that says that she has a dry sense of humor, which we have yet to see, by the way. Nothing she said was fucking dry. And she says that's about the only thing about her that's dry. Then she gets pissed there's another Victoria and that she has to be Victoria F.
And then she says she has to establish herself, taking charge. Strong play. So good, decent head on her shoulders. Good game sense.
Then MAGA Jenna brings an emotional support cow that ends up getting more screen time than her.
Kelly did a very interesting thing. She invoked God upon their first meeting. She said she thought it was a sign from God that they met in the hotel.
We are wondering, listeners, has there been a religious invocation in the limo arrivals? Let us know.
There must have been, but this was, I don't know, this just seemed early, and we already had the praying at the table, and it's just kind of like, bam, bam, back to back, God, God, back to back, fucking, fucking, fucking. A lot of God, a lot of fucking. How do you reconcile that?
I fucked in a windmill four times and Jesus still loves me. Then there's the women freaking out. There's going to be more girls. There's literally always 30, give or take one or two. Like,
but this is a very important part of the game. This is where you're picking your team. Now, once you come into the house, you come out of the limo, you've done whatever you want to do, worn a costume, you've fucking driven a car, you've said something funny, made him do a dance, whatever. You're now in the house. If you're the first person in the house, you have one job. It's to find the psychopaths, to find the people that you definitely don't want to be friends with and stay as far fucking away from them as you possibly can. If you're coming in later, your job is to find the group of people and go toward that group. Make friends with fucking people.
Most of the people are forming their friendships on night one. They film all night, and that is where you're going to want to spot your fellow top players. You don't want to be friends with the villain, but you want to find the people who are going to go far in this game because they are going to get the most followers and you can get that overflow.
Do you want to be in a group photo at Coachella with all the other people who have almost a million or even maybe over a million? Yes, you do. You want to fucking be in those photos. So you got to make friends with those people now.
Then we have Alabama Hammer.
Now, at this point, they're paying her? They're scripting this shit?
They're paying her a lot. She has 2.5 million followers. She doesn't need this.
What do you mean? Of course she does. What else does she have? She has the followers, yes, but she's not on TV. I think she is, in her mind, a TV star. She went from Bachelor to Bachelorette to Dancing with the Stars, which she won. How do you stay relevant? By being on the biggest night of reality TV in America every year, opening night of the fucking Bachelor.
And driving the storyline, ultimately.
Ultimately, yes, which we can get to.
We will get to it.
We will get to her second appearance, but her first appearance, she gives back the wings, and it seems like she's washing her hands of it.
She's just paid to like make this appearance, and that's it.
So they could use her in the promos. That is what it seems like. And all the girls breathe a sigh of relief as he comes in without her, and he says, "She just gave me back these wings, the symbol that I will give to one of you." even though it has been tarnished. And this is where we have some very strong play by Hannah Sluss. As he's returning in, she plays the role of the first responder, a crucial fucking role.
What is the first responder?
The first responder is the player who is sitting to the leftmost of the giant pit group couch that all the women are arranged on. And it's the player who has a drink in hand, ready for the bachelor, as soon as he walks through that archway to say, here, this is for you. First point of contact, it is a role of nurturing. It is a role of subservience. Both things that the bachelor looks for in women.
It also makes you the closest in physical proximity to the bachelor when he comes in, so you have the chance to grab him for the first one-on-one.
Which can be crucial. Hannah Sluss did not do that.
No.
But she did play first responder very well. Had that drink in his hand as soon as he crossed over the stairs.
Sluss didn't need to have the first conversation because she had half of the conversations.
Hannah Sluss not only had multiple conversations with him, she got the first consensual kiss.
She gives Pilot Pete this horrible painting that she did with her father, and yeah, gets the first consensual kiss, and Pilot Pete calls her his lucky charm.
I didn't understand that painting. What was it?
The painting was so bad.
But it was a painting that she and her father did together? Specifically for Pilot Pete?
I don't know if her dad painted on that painting or they both did their separate paintings at the same time. I would guess that's what it was. That they both painted this mountain. I don't know. That's probably just something that Christian families do.
What? Paint mountains?
At like father-daughter paint time?
Well, there is like daddy-daughter date night. Have you ever heard of this?
No.
This is a Christian ritual. It is, I promise you. It's advertised at Chick-fil-A.
What?
Yeah, it's where dads take their daughters on a date to wherever, to do whatever. It's either Mormon or it's evangelical. Have these purity promises that some girls will make to their fathers that they won't fuck until they're married. And they go with their dad to these balls every year, all the way up until they're engaged, I think.
Is that a thing where the dads give away the daughters at their like first presentation to society also? Is that
That's like debutante balls, I think it's slightly different. But whatever, it's all in the same world.
Yeah.
And the bachelor is a part of that world for sure, too.
Yeah, she ends up getting the first consensual kiss and then like goes back for seconds and thirds. Really strong play by the Sluss. Thought that was going to be my MVP.
Yeah, I did too at this point in the game because I was like, fuck. She's going back in and stealing him multiple times. She's kind of pissing off other girls, but she's doing a very, very good job of gauging Peter's reaction to it. Because the only person that matters if you're like stealing people and all this shit, if you're kind of like wrecking the pattern up, you know, taking time when maybe you shouldn't, when you've already had too much. The only person's whose opinion truly matters is the bachelor. And I thought she was reading him perfectly. He wanted her to come over there still. He was at least indulgent.
He loved her boldness.
So I thought that she got the most out of that by hitting it exactly the right amount of times. I think if she would have interrupted one more, it might have gotten like, okay, this girl's fucking crazy now.
Yeah.
She hit it right
at the sweet
spot.
The stealing sweet spot.
Right in the center of the barrel, as they'd say in baseball.
Tammy handcuffs him, does a security check, and finds the condom, his symbol for fucking, his tool for fucking, and then you have the place for fucking, which is the windmill. Makes out with Tammy. Natasha, he calls mysterious, and she says, I'm actually an open book, but it takes time. Mykenna keeps throwing paper planes at him. Kylie's on the verge of a panic attack. And then, Victoria has a conversation with him, and he has completely forgotten who she is and forgets her dry pussy line. And so she starts crying after.
And I believe it's Savannah who hears her crying and goes to her to offer a shoulder to help her out a little bit. This is a huge mistake. This is a big error. If you see someone alone and crying, you leave them alone and crying. You don't ever go to help them because chances are whatever has happened to them is going to be surrounded in a whirlwind of drama that you don't want to be a part of. And if you go to console them, you're aligning with them at least in some subliminal way to the other players, and you're kind of putting your eggs in that basket. You're hitching yourself to a broken wagon. and you should never do this.
Hitching yourself to a broken wagon. You're also letting go of an opportunity to let another player self-destruct. Your goal in this game is screen time, and you get screen time by staying in as long as possible, and that means trimming the numbers down. Blonde Victoria does a good line saying she's never gotten flowers from a guy before.
Yeah, I thought that was a fantastic strategy. Invariably on this first night, you're just looking for a way to get a rose. That's your whole goal, is surviving the fucking night because the cut is so fucking brutal. So you're looking for any way that you can get a rose. The Fimp Rose, of course, the first impression rose, is coveted. Very difficult to get, and there are only a few marginally more than vague strategies to get it. It's very hard to go in with something like very specific and get the Fimp Rose, I feel like.
She ends up getting the first flower.
First flower, yeah. Not the first rose, but the first flower. No, but I thought that that was like a brilliant attempt at it by saying she'd never gotten flowers before. I was like, fuck, yeah. Maybe that'll work. Maybe it'll work. And it, in a way, like you're saying, kind of did. First flower. But of course, the strategy of aggression by Hannah Ann Sluss paid off. She got the Fimp Rose.
Is it that, or is it the subtle psychology of the first responder?
All of these things. First responder is a part of it, but she kept coming back, gauged it perfectly, hit his sweet spot. She got the fucking first impression rose, which statistically means she's going to be around for at least another 4 episodes, maybe 5. The Fimp Rose is fucking crucial if you can get it. It's such a boon. It's such an indicator of his interest in you. And once you have it, you can kind of lay back in the cut. You don't even have to do much. You have to be the person who's just sitting around saying like, hey, you do what you have to do. I know we have a strong connection. You can ride your Fimp Rose for a while without having to do much work.
Yeah, something like 50% of Fimp Rose recipients make it to the finals. It's something crazy like that. Maybe it's hometowns.
It's because a bachelor doesn't, that first choice, first impressions are very strong, and it requires you to change your mind about something to reverse it, which is,
yeah. This is confirmation bias, which there is basically go. Like he's going to need so much information to the contrary to convince him that his previously held beliefs are not true.
Yeah, it would have to be cataclysmic. Some kind of villain turn or something.
Or maybe she gets the Fimp Rose for her fucking awful painting. A trinket that she presents to him. We get the MAGA, Jenna goes home, the Mormon, Kylie.
Well, we have a rose ceremony here in the middle of the fucking episode.
Oh, yes.
A first. I don't think I've ever seen it.
We've seen it in the middle of the season when there's like some drama or right. They need to stretch it out, like Colton's season. They'll fuck with the structure because traditionally the structure is a rose ceremony at the end of the episode, especially in the premiere.
So what, do you have any theories on why they cut it this way?
They wanted Hannah in the promos. They were like, Pilot Pete's not that compelling. Hannah is the most beloved person in Bachelor Nation right now. That's the cliffhanger. Is she going to stay?
So do you believe that that was manufactured before the season even started shooting?
It's hard to say because like that moment where Hannah's crying like feels real.
I think she can cry very easily. She's the most beloved bachelor in the fucking history of the game.
So you think she's in on it? It's all a lie.
No, not all a lie. I think if she and Peter wind up together, she'd be fine with that. It would grant her some more fame, et cetera, et cetera. I think she's looking back at all the choices she's made as Bachelorette and thinking to herself, how long can I sustain this Bachelorette thing? Because it's kind of over now.
I feel like she's kind of crying because she's just thinking about how, like, she fucked up with Jed. She was tricked.
But that she fucked up the entire situation and that she may not get another one. And now her best chance is to try and crash this season, maybe.
It's also a great strategy if Pilot Pete doesn't take her back to be the next Bachelorette.
Yeah. No, she's playing it well, but I don't think it's just her. I think the producers orchestrated all of this. She's just dancing to the puppet strings.
No, I don't
now.
Think it was of her own accord that she wanted to tell the sex story at the beginning of a group date.
We'll get to that. My God, we'll get to that. Hannah gives him back the thing, and then they summarily dismiss how many people?
He eliminated 8 players.
8 out of 30.
Avon, Leah, Eunice, Jade, Jenna, Katrina, Kylie, Marissa, and Megan. I was surprised Megan went home.
Yeah, these are the breaks. I mean, like we're saying, the first night cut is the most brutal, statistically. And you just got to survive it. You got to do anything you have to, really. And unfortunately for these ladies, we thank you for your time. Your suffering was savored, even though it was brief. And then, of course, he invokes the power phrase after he's dismissed the people who Lord Harrison is consuming their souls in the parking lot. He comes back into those remaining and says, I think my wife's in here. And we know that he's serious. We know that it's a kind of subliminal praising of the process.
Subliminal? Feels pretty direct to
You're
me.
Right. It's an overt praising.
There's going to be an engagement at the end of this. Stand by. Next, we cut to I guess later that day. It is morning for this rose ceremony, but
I bet they gave him a day to sleep. They had to have.
Really?
Yeah. Can you imagine that shit? You stay up the whole fucking night. The sun is coming up, and they're like, "Put on your flight suits." There's no fucking way.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I bet they slept all that next day.
It is so embarrassing that he has to hose himself down on an airplane shirtless.
That's part of the deal. If you're the fucking bachelor, you get one shower thing. There is some dignity in the one that he did, I guess. The one that they had Colton do? Holy fucking shit. It was like porn.
Yeah.
He's like fucking
they played
rubbing
that
himself.
So many times.
This at least was like a wide shot. We're not in the shower with somebody while they're fucking soaping their boobs off.
The Colton shower thing, I think, was from one day, and they just played it throughout the season.
Yeah.
Lord Harrison comes in to announce the group date, and he repeats that, Pilot Pete said he thinks his wife is in here. He comes in with his empty eyes and raises the level of competition.
You always got to stoke those flames. Don't let the players get too comfortable at any given time. That's why they brought Hannah back. At least that first night, the only purpose that served was to get all of the other players going fucking crazy. They forced the producers round them up, push them up against the windows, put them at the fucking doors. Okay, everybody, look in that parking lot. Somebody else is coming.
What's in the parking lot?
And then Hannah Brown steps up. They made sure all of them are looking. Holy shit. Now what is this? There's some new element in the game.
They tell them where to look all the time. They do this again for this group date, and the date card says, look up, and they all rush to the window, and Pilot Pete is flying overhead. He's probably not even flying.
Talking to them. He's saying things like, oh, hey, girl, see you in a minute.
Yeah, he waves.
I'm surprised they didn't put in like another shot of him doing the fucking barrel roll and all of them going like, oh my God, I can't believe he's a stunt pilot.
They make them do pilot training for this group date. They have to do a math test. There's a mile high question in there, of course. Second mention of the Mile High Club in this episode. They do a bunch of dirty aviation terms. Sex and planes.
It's just like ramming it down your fucking throat. He really knows his fucking. And even when he's buying a plane, he still talks like about a fucking. It's just, oh God, I don't. It's so fucking weird how they are just doing it in plain sight. It is very Trumpian. I know that I say this a lot, but it truly is. You believe Trump's lie, even though in plain sight, he's contradicting himself and doing horrible shit. But if you support him, whatever. Same thing in this. There's people who believe that this shit is real. That he's really a good Christian. That he's really there to find love.
Most people watch this thinking that.
But then also in plain sight, they're just like, fucking. Pounded into your fucking skull.
Yeah, it's Christian white people who fuck is kind of the theme now.
So does this mean that Christianity as a whole in America is okay with fucking?
I feel like Hannah's windmill line kind of, might have changed religion in this country.
Well, I think at least I'm not saying that it changed official doctrine, but in terms of what's socially acceptable in conservative Christian churches,
might be.
Religious groups, is casual sex now okay?
I don't know.
Maybe the Bachelor's doing some good.
Should we go to church, do some research?
No.
So then we have all the women have to do a gyroscope. Of course, this is someone's trauma. Victoria P. starts having a panic attack.
And they give us a little segment that they cut together, very much like Annalise and the bumper cars on whoever season that was.
Yeah, I don't know.
Ari?
I think we can call this the Annalise cut now.
Yeah, where they take something seemingly inconsequential and make a terrifying nightmare version of it for us.
Like a fake flashback. They did it for her with bumper cars. Yeah, it must have been Ari.
I was going to say it was an error for me, but it turned out okay for her. But in situations like that, you never see players reject the thing, whatever they're being forced to do. You never see a player say like, hey, I don't want to do this. I have a fucking bad stomach right now. This is going to make me queasy. Like, I'd rather just sit this one out. Can we be cool with that? No one ever fucking does that. They go in the thing they hate. Then they fucking have to go puke in front of them or whatever.
No, they have to participate gleefully. That's the whole thing.
But even though she was in terror, every second of her experience in that gyroscope thing, she was fucking miserable. She was like on the verge of screaming, panic attacking, all that shit, and he's flipping her around as fast as he can. You like going fast? I mean, it's fucking crazy. He's torturing her on fucking television. And we're all watching it, and it's like, that's part of their love story, is he tortured her on their first date.
The most beautiful love story of all time. Then they all have to do a flight-themed obstacle course. And for some reason, there's slime on this obstacle course. Everything else is normal plane stuff, but then they're just like, oh yeah, and you have to get fucking dirty.
Normal plane stuff? How many pilots do you think have to run a fucking obstacle course before they get their flying license?
You probably do have to go down the fake blow-up slide thing. Not fake.
Yeah, maybe once, but not into a pit of slime. Like it's fucking Double Dare.
Then we come to my play of the game.
Mine too. It has to be. It's beautiful.
Kelly, the lawyer, gets down to the final two and she fucking just cheats. She just goes straight through the obstacle course, doesn't go around any of the flags, and there's no referee at this point. The flight ladies are MIA. Peter's like, yeah, I want to go out with the hot lawyer I met before. And they just go. And she wins the first one-on-one.
It was brilliant on so many levels. And I don't know if she realized it. It might have just been natural for her to do it. Like, fuck it, I'm going to fucking just go for it right here. Fine, if it was. But it did some very interesting things. One, obviously, she wins and she gets the prize, as you're saying. Gets to go on the fucking plane with him. But on another level, it also conveys that she doesn't really give a fuck about like these stupid games and the construct of the show. It kind of implies on a very, very subtle level that she is there for TRR for the right reasons. It's like, I don't care about this fucking dumb obstacle course. I just want to hang out with you. And I'm willing to like drive this fucking stupid trike in a straight line.
Yeah, I didn't know you guys were all going to take it so seriously. The point is to spend time with Peter and get to know him.
And then on the date, she does a fucking brilliant move. At the end of it, they're flying in the plane, they're landing, and she says to him, this was a great date, but you know, now I got a target on my back. These other girls are not going to like me very much. She warns him of what she knows is going to happen.
Some of the girls are going to be upset.
She knows the girl that she cheated out of this is going to be fucking livid.
She heard Eunice yelling, you're cheating,
yeah,
you're cheating.
Yeah, and just kept going. Fuck it, am I?
Amazing.
This game has a bunch of rules, but fucking riding through the cones on a tricycle ain't one of them.
4TRR is the only rule that matters.
Yeah, that was really impressive. I think she's going to do very well.
And in that move, she leaves the rest of the women crying.
She was, no, it was my play the game. She was my MVP for this.
Ooh, different MVP.
No, we'll have the debate. But for all the reasons we've just said, Kelly was also my MVP.
So your MVP comes back to the group. Eunice accuses her of cheating. She gives a very non-response. Then she also gets more one-on-one time. They're in the hotel where they met.
It was very interesting, I thought, when they reenact their first meeting in the hotel where they met prior. So the producers have set all of this up to be in that hotel. They know all of this. They're clearly orchestrating events that will lead them down a path to, in quotes, love or whatever. They're making their relationship easier, certainly. I find that pretty fucking interesting. So they clearly want this girl to go far.
Yeah, I mean, they set that hotel up before she won the relay race. Do you think they encouraged her to cheat?
No, because I don't think it matters. Whoever went in the plane went in the plane. That's just like it happened to be somebody he liked, but doesn't matter. They still would have had the cocktails that night in the hotel.
Yeah. And Pilot Pete lifts her up on a counter. His move that he did with Hannah makes out. Says, you know what else you need? Counter time. Then we get the first official one-on-one, Maddie.
Did we mention that Kelly gets the rose from that group date?
Kelly gets the rose from that group date.
Another reason that she's my MVP. Yes. Because if you can pull a rose out of a group date, especially one of the first ones, it's essentially like almost a first impression rose. It's a first impression rose or FIMP rose light because it is still conveying selecting you above the other players. It's a more kind of competitive victory, that rose, for sure. Yeah, so then Madison Pruitt gets the first true one-on-one.
It is what appears to be a fake wedding, then turns out to be Peter's parents' yard. And it is his parents renewing their vows. And this is my Jorge Moreno bystander of the week. Peter's parents. They are the first people over the age of 30 to get a wedding paid for by ABC through this franchise.
It was stellar play. Don't get me wrong. But I don't know that they're, bystanders, they're almost elevated. We've seen them praise Peter's fucking abilities on After the Final Rose from last season. To me, they're almost like recurring characters now, which I guess Jorge Moreno was on BIP, but I don't know. I don't know if his family is bystanders, but I'll give it to you because I have no good counter argument. I thought that the ladies who to me, they were not of note.
They didn't affect the game, and I feel like Pilot Pete's parents are a huge, they're trying to play this up as like he's a huge like family guy.
Mm-hmm.
I see him, he plays this up on his Instagram as well. They're all decorating the tree together. And
I know. Okay.
Maybe their play wasn't in this episode, but their reward for being bystander of the week, I guess, in that after the final rose is the wedding. Peter ordains the vows. They could not afford Lord Harrison's rates as an officiant.
$600 for a cameo video.
It would have been so funny if they just had him on a cameo for the vow renewal. Their vows are basically, I love you so much, we made a bachelor.
And then his mom throws a bouquet. Who catches it? Who do you think catches it?
I caught the bouquet from his mom. This is a trophy, and she knows it. She is a high school basketball star, as we know, and she has that competitive spirit. I think, here's the thing. Here's why she's my MVP. She plays this entire one-on-one completely flawlessly. But she sets it up like, oh, isn't this so fun? I'm a family person. This is basically like our own wedding. I think she can literally just coast from here.
I think so too. And I'm not saying that it was bad play at all. It was just very, to me, bland play. Yes, she made all the right moves. She did nothing experimental. She did nothing out of the norm. Her play style, to me, doesn't have any flair. Doesn't have any panache. And I tend to like those players a little more.
She raises her love level. She says, I wasn't expecting to feel this so fast. She's conveying that she's surprised at how into the bachelor she is. She praises the process. She puts walls up. She says, I take things slow. So Peter's going to have to tear down those walls.
I agree with everything you're saying. She did everything correctly. And she did, and he believed it. It was, and the date she was on has special significance to Peter. So you know already, like, he took you into his family's vows renewal. You're in. You're right. She can coast for a long time. I'm just saying she didn't do, there was nothing in this that was surprising to me. I was like, this
Kelly's
is what you
move,
should be doing.
Kelly's
this is what
move was definitely, had more flair. Fucking
exactly.
Steamrolling through that.
Exactly. To be a true great of our beloved fucking game, you have to know where you can bend the rules a little bit. Madison Pruitt strikes me as somebody who will never bend a rule, even a fucking inch. She's going to be a perfect player, and that is boring to me. I like a little fucking, oh shit, didn't see that coming, you know? So that's why she wasn't my MVP. That's why Kelly was mine, because yes, I didn't see that coming.
No. Then we think it's just a standard one-on-one concert date, and then it turns out to be the parents' wedding reception, and everyone dances together. So now we have the second group date, which begins with Alabama Hannah next to a windmill, and she retells the windmill story.
I know we talk a lot about how these people are manipulated on this show, and the Dark Lord Harrison is pulling the strings of the producers, whatever. And we talk a lot about how these people are made to do shit that they clearly don't want to do. Like, who was it in the gyroscope that puked?
Victoria P.
Victoria P. But now they're forcing even the Bachelorette, the person that they crowned as their Miss America, they are forcing her to demean herself by going out in front of this crop of new players and repeating a story about how she fucked the current bachelor, standing among them, four times in a windmill while she stands next to a big stage thing of a windmill. What the fuck is going on in this show?
I don't know. It was so fucking strange. I mean, we don't actually see what the format of this group date is. It seems like maybe it's going to be them telling a personal story or something, but...
In front of a live audience, she says. So it's the embarrassment date.
You need to basically prepare a couple different types of stories for a public performance before you come on the show.
Or poems, stand-up routines. All of these are good to have. You should really have like kind of a catch-all that can be a story that's funny. And you need a catch-all that's like a song.
Emotional...
Maybe has some rhyming in it or something, you know, a poem. Because you will be tasked to perform, and certainly that's what happens here. And everybody now in their confessionals is saying, I feel weird, this is awkward. I didn't like hearing her talk about fucking the guy that I'm now trying to fuck.
Yeah, this was hard enough without his ex being on the show.
But again, it's just fucking. This guy can really fuck. Trust me. I fucked him. I fucked him four times in a windmill. You can trust me when I say this guy fucks.
Yeah, your vagina is never going to be free from him. Happy group date. Anyway, she has some private backstage time with Pilot Pete, and they have this bizarre conversation.
She's alone, crying. The producers had to come get Pilot Pete and be like, hey, Hannah's crying in the back. You should go talk to her.
They got her to cry. They like start talking to her about her relationship with him.
And regrets. Do you have any fucking regrets? Which of course she does. Her 10 years bachelorette ended in disaster.
So this is why I don't believe, it seems like a false cliffhanger to me, is because I think this is filmed, this was filmed at the same time as Dancing with the Stars.
I just think there is simply... I don't look at spoilers, but I pick up clues.
Yeah, please do not share any spoilers with us, by the way. It's very hard to avoid, but I've been doing a pretty good job.
Me too. But yeah, they leave little clues here and there, and I got no clues that she's in the rest of the season.
You just can't reinsert yourself into the game after you've been the crown. No one's done that. We've had a couple players return, maybe. Didn't Becca Tilly return? Nick Bial. But this
not
is before.
After wearing the crown.
No, he was. Yeah, he wore the crown, and then.
That's the highest honor, and then you retire.
Yeah.
Or you can come back as a commentator or whatever. But.
Or you can have the crown again, which has been done once with Brad Womack. So in this conversation between Pilot Pete and Hannah, he basically said that he still had hope she would come back to him. But then got sad when she went out with Tyler. And she says she went out with Tyler because he reached out and Pilot Pete didn't. And that I thought you wanted to be the bachelor. She says that to him.
And he did, of course. And he wants fame. He has fame. The weirder thing to me about this is at this point, we're all watching this show still. How is anybody in their right fucking mind looking at this and being like, oh yeah, this show is trying to help him find love? Literally the first episode... They have derailed every relationship he has started to build with every other woman on that show. Purposely. And destroyed The Last Bachelorette in the process emotionally. How can anyone look at that and think, yeah, this show is designed to help people find love? They are torturing these people from frame one in the most Machiavellian ways they can.
We savor their suffering.
Exactly. We love it. Oh my God, what's going to happen? She's crying. We love to see all these people cry and stuff. It's really, I don't know. It just makes me feel bad when I watch this show. And there is a compulsive element that requires me for some reason to fucking just like analyze it to death and find all these little things about the game of it. I just feel very bad when I watch this show. So we'll see what happens next week.
Yeah. Play the game. I had Kelly cheating, MVP, Maddie.
Yeah, I had Kelly cheating as play the game. My MVP was also Kelly.
I hope to see more play like Kelly cheating.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Strong play so far from a lot of players. There's just a lot of people doing things correctly and really minimizing the errors. And some stellar play. I mean, fuck. That play of the game that we both had this early in the fucking game, it's astounding. The creativity of it.
Ask for forgiveness, not permission.
Anyway, thank you guys very much for listening. As always, we will be here next week, diligently examining our beloved game and all of the players and their plays. But before we go, as always, what's the dwab at?
It has been 6,497 days without a Black Bachelor. Join us at 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time to catch our weekly Bachelor ritual on the Game of Roses Instagram page, Game of Roses, R-O-Z-E-S. And if you like the show, rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. Praise be Lord Harrison.